I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. It's Raghu. I am back with another edition of Mind Rolling. And hey, everyone, meet Tez and Koa. Hi.
Hello. Hello. Namaste.
Hello. Aloha.
You know, wish we were in Aloha land, but we're not. Sorry. I say this a lot, but basically I am really, really fortunate to, I only met you because you're interested in Ram Dass, and you wrote and said, hey, you know, we've been listening to this, that, and the other, and yep. And we just connected, right? So Ram Dass, of course, we have to, I thank him for a lot, but I must include that very
here
fact.
Again.
Yeah, well, my whole network enlarges by virtue of course, these podcasts, but also by the fact of my relationship with Ram Dass over all these years. And I meet incredible people. So great to meet you both.
Well, oh, yes. Yeah, great to meet you too. And we were introduced to you because you always introduce the podcast. And
yeah, so Ram Dass here like, now. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a cool energy to it, you know?
Yeah. And it's, like when I first started doing them, I thought, okay, let's start at the beginning. So I got like the earliest Ram Dass talks around how he eventually got over to India. So it was all the beginning stuff. So I thought, maybe I'll talk about how I got to India. And I paralleled it. So for the first few episodes, anybody out there who hasn't listened to these, they're kind of cool. The first few episodes are that. And
can I say that was so freaking genius? I loved it. Like you got two in one. Like we followed your
stories,
journey.
Yeah.
And then followed Ram Dass's journey. So that was beautiful.
Yeah. Actually, Tezra introduced me to Ram Dass. I didn't know. She was like, we were looking around in a shopping area in Brooklyn and she was looking for a book from him. And I didn't know who he was at all. And so when I heard the name, I was like, oh, who is this Hindu fellow with a long beard that you're looking for? And then I saw his picture. I was like, oh, okay. And then she was like, oh, no, you got to check out Ram Dass. So I got into the podcast and I was, let's say, about almost 100 episodes later.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Definitely hooked, and there's many more to go. So.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Thank you both for that.
Now, everybody out there, Tez and Koa have a podcast as well that's fairly new, months old, maybe?
Yeah, very new.
And it's called I Am Not That, right?
Right.
I Am Not That podcast.
Yes, liberating the self from the self.
So
meaning.
Yeah. Go ahead. meaning
liberating that great self from the small contracted self, because normally our small contracted self is what drives us, is what controls us. And so it kind of holds our great self hostage. So we want to liberate our great self from that small self through our podcast.
Right. And using, well, that's, we have the, I call it the mini me. You call it the small self.
Yeah.
The mini me guy and gal that believes their story that they've been causes and conditions have created. And, but we need that. We need that in order to be able to transform so that we can connect with that true self. So I love I Am Not That. And it made me think of, some extraordinary teachers, and in one case, Ramana Maharshi. Have you heard of Ramana Maharshi from South India?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and of course, the whole self-inquiry practice. And so, but before we go there, because we can have a nice, rich talk around him for sure, I just need to hear, because this is what I do. Hope you all out there aren't getting bored by the, but this is how we get to know people. So right. Just take a turn.
Michael,
about,
you're never boring though.
Okay. Thank you. So.
Okay. Flattery gets you everywhere.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But I do want to hear just each one, you know, give us your story and how you grew up, the kind of family, the kind of environment, and basically what was that trigger to even introduce you to the idea of self-inquiry, higher self, whatever, spiritual path, whatever it was. I mean, because we all have that story. So you want to start, Tez?
Sure. So my upbringing was, I didn't have one of those rosy fairy tales of a childhood. There was some trauma there emotionally.
Where were you brought up? What town?
So the first part, I was brought up in Ohio. I was born in Texas, but I was brought up in Ohio. And then my mother joined the military. And so after that, we did a large stint in Texas. And then, of course, you know how the story goes with the military life.
Yeah.
But that served me well, though, because I got exposed to so many different people, cultures, you know, and different ways of living. So that like made me well-rounded. And like, even in high school, it was a very diverse, you know, school. So it was some of everyone. So we had a very balanced, you know, outlook. I had a balanced outlook on the world. But what led me on my spiritual path was that I, you know, started off in the church because a large part of us, part of the Black community, we start off in church. So naturally, that's where I started off. But something just wasn't doing it for me. I was missing something. And then I began to feel like I was in bondage, like in spiritual bondage. And so I was torn because I was only taught church. So I said, well, if I leave the church, one, you know, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to be doomed to the pits of hell, you know, so I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not happy. So what do I do? So it was a real inner turmoil. And I remember somebody had told me when I was in church, you should read this book, Conversations with God. And so this is like the mid to late 90s. And I was like, no, I can't read that book because, you know, it's an abomination. It's not, you know, from Jesus. And so you can't read it. Mm-hmm. So I'd never read it. But when I was coming to the end of it, when I realized that, you know what, this really is not serving me, there's something more out there for me, I need to open myself up. Was in a thrift store with my mom visiting, and I came across the book, Conversations with God. And I was like, oh, shit, here it is. And so I said, well, if it's meant for me to buy this book, if it's over a dollar, I'm going to leave it right here because I'm in a thrift store. I'm not paying more than $1.50 for something. I'm in a thrift store. So I said, if it's over a dollar, I'm not paying for it. I opened up the book and it was written 75 cents. Mm-hmm. Well, so I said, okay, you're coming home with me. Read the first couple of chapters.
Donald Walsh, right?
Yes. Yep. Read the first couple of chapters and immediately I felt the shackles just pop right off.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean? I mean, the obvious constriction was around the church, which, you know, I had similar thing. I'm Jewish, but Judeo-Christian, those same chains. But describe them in a personal term of what they were for you.
So,
and related to the family. I mean, your mother was in the bookstore, so she didn't say, do not buy this book, right?
Yeah, no, she didn't say that. She was actually shopping for other little trinkets in the thrift store. I was in the book section of a thrift store. Mm-hmm. So, and she wasn't like the real spiritual type. I actually brought her to Christ. Like I brought her to, you know, meet her salvation with Christ.
The church was one thing, but Christ was certainly another thing, right?
Christ was certainly another thing, but then with the church, I began to put God in a box. And I think that's what started my suffocation. I began to put him in a little small box because we refer to him so much as him and he and as a man, you know, and so man only has but so much, you know, expansion, you know, it's very limited. Mm-hmm. And so I became limited in my thinking and my feeling. But then when I read the first two paragraphs of Conversations with God, immediately I became to know that I was this boundless spirit, this boundless energy. And that's what I was searching for. So I felt like I had came home. And for the first time, I'm not a big reader at all. I read that book in like 2 to 3 days. But Raghu, for the first time when the book ended, I cried because I didn't want it to be over. Not because it was a good story, you know, it's because I didn't want it to be over. But it was like, Tezra, you have what you need. And I'm sending you on your way. So it was a sweet departure, but yeah. So.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, incredible. Karma is incredible.
Yeah.
Kala, how about you? Where are you from and how did it happen for you?
Okay, well, I am from New York City. I was born in Manhattan. And it was a very interesting road. Mine's, like Tez said, it wasn't all roses and everything. Mine was a pretty bumpy road on the way to sit here in front of you today. So in the spirit of Ram Dass and just basically... being very forthcoming. Mine started when my mom was sick. I would say that would be a good starting point. Both of my parents were in meditation. I had met Swami Muktananda, who I heard, and before he passed, and I
you met him?
As a child.
But you look like you're 32 years old here. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. No, this is mid-40s and above. I was a child. It was late 70s, and I'd met him before and seen him. Wow. And my dad knew him. And so I was familiar with meditation and familiar with Siddha yoga. But I was still, you know, rambunctious New Yorker. We got into a lot of stuff and trouble and, you know, in teenage years, we're out, you know, smoking weed and drinking and just doing all the stuff that we did here. But around that time, late teen years, my mom was sick, breast cancer. Mm. And at that age, I didn't express myself very well. I didn't have much to say. You know, you ask me, hey, what's going on? You look like something's troubling you. What's wrong? No, nothing. I'm good. Nothing. You know, the answer was pretty much nothing. You know, I never had anything to say. So I bottled up a lot of things and a lot of anger, a lot of frustrations, and didn't express them well. So when she was really ill and it was getting towards the end, I got into some arguments with my family, with my uncle, and it just kind of sent me over. And I just decided to do something that was just really out of character. I chose one person because out of my friends, I had a good support group, good friends, but I knew one person that if I asked to do something, you know, on the wrong side of things, that person would be like, hell yeah, let's do it. All my other friends would have been like, okay, clearly you're going through something. Let's talk. Let's have get some drink. We're not doing anything that you're suggesting right now. But he was the one person that was like, yeah, whatever. I'm down for whatever. So we went out and did a robbery. I mean, normally when you do a robbery, it's like you need money. I didn't need money. I just was very frustrated, very upset, and wanted to just lash out and just take it out somehow on someone. So I did that. And to shorten the story, I got caught for it and ended up going to prison for it. So that was kind of the, you know, where you think it would be like, oh, this is just a story going bad to worse. That was kind of the beginning. I started to meet all kinds of unusual people. I mean, I know they say that prison's supposed to be rehabilitation. They don't seem to run it that way, but my journey, my journey though began, I started to run into the most unusual people that showed me things in prison. Wow. I met a guy who was able to read minds and he could prove it. And he never had to spend money at commissary because he just made bets and wagers that he could pull this off. And he did. And he had a system for pulling it off. And he spoke to me, and actually he didn't take advantage of me. He told me that this is what he could do. And he said, I'll show you, I'll prove it to you, but I don't do it for free. So just bet me one cigarette. You know, he took it easy on me. So he basically would say, come up with three questions and you know the answers to them. And you go write them down, go where you need to go, go off to another room, write them down on a piece of paper. And so this is where you can't change your answers. But when you come back to me, we're going to do one question at a time, and you just think the answer in your mind. So he had me at the first question. I mean, my first question was, what was my address when I was 10 years old? And I sat there looking at this guy like, yeah, right. Like, come on. And he looked at me, took a pause, and he said, 400 West 43rd Street, apartment 10C, New York, New York, 10036. All of that information. And my other question was, where was I in 1992? And I had the initials in my head. I didn't have the words. I just had the initials HU as the answer. And so he looked at me and paused, and he was like, what's HU stand for? Oh, and I was like, that's Howard University. And he was like, oh, okay. So, and then I tried to trick him, because my mom had passed at this point, and I tried to trick him, and I said, well, what happened in August of 94? And I was smiling, and I was like, like, what happened then? Like, tried to make it sound like it was something positive, and he just stared at me for a moment, and he said, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Your mom passed. Yeah, we have my condolences. So he showed that this was possible, and I said, okay. And anyway, my journey moved on. I went from different places. They move you around and stuff like that. And I ran into someone else who could do similar things. Not as on point as this guy, but he was very good at, he was really good at seeing. And I said, this is interesting. So towards the end, when I was ready to be released, getting towards that point, I had been in there for a couple of years. I only did 2 years. Two long years, but that's short for a lot of people that are in there. But so I'm getting ready to come out in another few months. And I laid down to go to sleep, and I had what I remember to this day very vividly, with in complete color and description, an out-of-body experience. It was like completely amazing.
Where were you?
I was laying down just in the system. I was just laying down. At this point, I was transferred to a minimum facility. So there's like no fences. There's no, you know, you can basically just walk off if you want to. But why do that? You're going home soon. So I'd lay down just to take a nap. And that was it. I was I knew who I was. I knew that I left my body. Like, usually the dreams, I don't have that much control. I'm just doing random things. Everything's looking weird. And I meet people that I know or don't know. And you're instantly somewhere else. You don't, you know, you just go along with the flow of it. And then you wake up. But this one, I was clearly aware of that I was moving around. I had a guide, a female guide that was taking me places. I could tell where she was, even though she didn't have a body. I knew where to look, like as far as to make eye contact, but there weren't any eyes. And it wasn't confusing. I was very clear where she was. And even when she was showing me things, like she would do what you would call point at something, but there was no arm or finger to point, but I knew she was pointing. Mm-hmm. I knew to look over at things. And we were traveling at the speed of thought. We would be one place and then instantly somewhere else. And I remember being in a big open field. It was like completely amazing. Like everything was, the colors were very bright and vivid. Like everything was pulsing with life. And then we would be at we just instantly was in a small town that looked kind of like France, cobblestone roads. It kind of looked like someplace in either France or Italy. And it was just amazing to just watch people. And it was just going on this tour with her. And then we like instantly zapped to a place where I would say is Manhattan around Prince Street, somewhere in Soho. It looked identical to that space. And I mean, I recognized it. That's the only place I recognized out of the places that we visited. And we were on a rooftop looking down, just watching people go about their lives, just doing whatever they were doing. And I was just in awe of the whole entire experience. And I went to peek over the rooftop to look even further down, straight down to the sidewalk. And sometimes on buildings at the top of the building, just underneath the rooftop, like birds or like pigeons kind of hang out sometimes. Mm. And they must have been aware of energy that was there because they took off like something was there, even though I feel like we weren't visible to anything. They took off and I was like almost in what would have been the equivalent of tears looking at these birds. It looked amazing. Like I'm from the city. They look like dirty birds. They call them rats with wings. Like we don't care about pigeons whatsoever. But in this case, they had all these colors and they were just magnificent. And I was like almost moved to tears about it. Like, this is like amazing. And then eventually I get up and it's very jolting. I was instantly very depressed. And it wasn't, I was depressed because I was in the facility. I was just depressed to be back in a body, to be back physical. Mm. It's like, I got to get from here to there, I got to walk. Like it was just so all of a sudden you have to be in this dense, heavy, world. And it took a while to come down to be like, okay, I'm all right. I'm all right. Mm. And that was an experience I had. And then one more before
you weren't on acid on that in that experience.
No. You know what? It was actually the opposite. I feel like for the first time I hadn't been smoking weed or drinking. Like I hadn't done anything for 2 whole years. My body was so cleaned out at this point. I think that's what helped facilitate the experience. Yeah. That I was just clean. So that took place. And then I remember not so long after that, I have 2 more things before I get released. I had a song in my head and it was like Smokey Robinson, I believe, just Quiet Storm Blowing. And it was just on repeat. You get a song in your head, just keeps on going. It wasn't even much into the lyrics. It was just that same part over and over and over again. And I couldn't stop it. I never sung it out loud, but it was in my head. And I was getting something out of my cabinet or doing something by my bed area. And about 3 or 4 feet away, because the way the minimum was set up, it's like army barracks where it's just bed after bed after bed. There's no walls or anything like that. So the guy just 2 or 3 feet to my right, he's doing something and getting his things out of his cabinet. And he just starts humming, Quiet Storm Blowing. Mm-hmm. And I look over to him. I'm like, come on. And so that's kind of when I realized that it wasn't just that guy who was gifted at mental connections and being able to read minds, that we are sharing thought energy all the time, whether we realize it or not. And if you're able to exercise that muscle and be in tune with it, then so that was like my awakening just to that kind of thing that was possible.
Right.
So eventually I was transferred to out of there. I'm in New York City. And I'm ready to be released. You're at a place where you can't receive care packages, like you can't get books or clothes or food. Like you can get that when you're further away, but when this is like you're ready to go, so they don't accept that. So my dad visited and tried to get me a book, but he couldn't get the book in because they said there's no packages. So he cut the book up in pieces and in pages and put them in envelopes super thick, like $3 or $4 postage on an envelope, and sent like 2 or 3 envelopes mm-hmm. with this book in it to make sure that I can get it for my last like week or so in this place. And he happens to send a book called, you might have heard of it, it's called Conversations with God. He sends me this book, and I'm like, it's amazing listening to Tez's story, because right out the gate, I'm all the way. It was completely amazing. It was like a finishing touch on a journey that had been really, really surreal. And I had like no issues or problems of the typical, no shankings, no, you know, I didn't have any issues at all. You know, that it wasn't that kind of journey. It was a really, really expanding journey. And this is around the same time frame, yeah. you know, in the mid to late 90s. Yep.
That you both kind of contacted, that book contacted both of you. This book.
Yeah, wow. And completely altered everything, because it explained things in such a kid could understand it. And it was just going into such deep topics that was so, that it just was so amazing. Mm. And I had the same exact, I didn't know this until just now, actually, about Tez, but that I had a real problem getting to the book was almost over. I read it in a day. I've never read a book over 200 pages in a day. I mean, I've never been that interested in anything that I liked that I read that had had me just stick at the book that long. But I mean, I did have a lot of time on my hands. But yeah, I purposely left myself like 3 or 4 pages just to have something to read the next day, because I knocked it out in a day. It was like an amazing book.
Crazy. Yeah. And then Then you, how long after did you actually meet from that, the point of around that book?
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this is 20 something years later, because he's from New York. I only moved here in 2001. He started working at the same restaurant where I work at in 2006.
Not that early.
So like 2000, he was there 5 years. So you were there.
About 2008 or something like that. Yeah. Close to that time.
Yeah. So, but we never really interacted, because I was a manager and he was part of the team as a bartender. And I really don't, you know, go in too deep with, you know, because you don't want to blur those lines. And so they always called me like, where's my liquor list? Like, it was always straight business. We never really had a conversation. And then as I'm going along my journey, you know, I had failed relationship after failed relationship. I'm in my mid 40s. And so by this time, I found my spiritual teacher, whose guru was Guru Muktananda. And my spiritual teacher, her name is Rudrani. Amazing. So I was sharing with her, you know, my relationship woes, you know, how all the women in my family, you know, we're never successful at love. We never had a, you know, meaningful relationship. And I said, I think I'm cursed. And I really thought I was cursed. And she says something to me, and I told her that my heart chakra was closed. And she just kind of like, oh, poor dear. She said, well, one thing, your heart chakra can never be closed. So, and then she says something to me, whatever she said, it was the energy that she said it in. And at that moment, whatever I was carrying, whatever I was identifying with as a failed female in relationships, it just melted. Raghu, it just came off of me. Like that weight just shed. And I knew from that moment that I would not be the same person in relationships anymore. Wow. And I also had told the universe, I'm open to whatever. I'm going to say yes to whatever, you know, you bring my way. He asked me out about a week later. Went out, no fireworks, you know, it's just like, okay. But then as we're on the phone, one day I said, I'm going to have to let this brother from Harlem know what my spiritual path is, because he's not going to know what a Guru Muktananda is. He's not going to know what an ashram is. So I started sharing with him, and he says to me, when I said, you know, I would love to go to the ashram, and he said, I was there. And I said, you were where? And he was like, I was at the ashram and I saw Guru Muktananda. And so then I started looking at this situation a little bit differently. because I knew that now this is some synchronicity going on. It's just not two people happening to come together to see what can pop off. Like there was some, you know, a deeper meaning here. And then the rest is history. We're now married. Yeah. I married the bartender.
Like... Bravo. Bravo.
Thank you.
That's
thank
like
you.
A great opera. It's a great story. It should be an opera. I don't know why I'm thinking that. But, oh, that's fantastic. Wow. Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, when you were talking about being incarcerated, Toa, and meeting people who were fairly incredible, you know, and sharing with you in a way that propelled you into these experiences, it reminded me of, I met this Tibetan Lama named Garchen Rinpoche, and he had been arrested in Tibet by the Chinese and put into a Chinese prison for 20 years. And, or maybe even more, but around 20 years. In that prison, he met his guru and he became, I mean, how awoken he is. He's a very high lama. You know, I wouldn't know any of this stuff, but I actually was his driver in LA for a few days or a week that he was doing a retreat there that I wanted to attend. And he just told us he never, you know, one of the things that's so outstanding, he never, ever blamed the Chinese, was angry at the Chinese, was wanting retribution, none of it. And a lot of that was he attributed to his guru, who had gone beyond that duality. Anyhow, that's just something that triggered in me that I thought I'd share with you. It was such a powerful experience for me back then, and yours no less. And it just shows, I mean, the reality of causes and conditions that make us who we are and lead us in the, I mean, I can't believe you both read the same damn book and it opened you up in that way, or that you wanted to see Muktananda and of course Koa had actually had darshan of him.
Yeah. And especially in our community, you know, yoga and Eastern philosophy and ancient wisdom teachings, that's not popular at all. So to run into a guy, yeah, a man right, at that,
right. Right.
You know.
Yeah, I also told her that I remembered Rudrani. She's an elder.
You may not know who Rudrani is.
It's her spiritual teacher. Mm-hmm. I remembered her at the ashram because she was very much involved. She would have that, wear those Indian saris and have the binti, and I would see her just with like a clipboard or doing like not always, but I would see her just looking like she belonged there. She wasn't visiting. I would see her all the time there. Whenever I would go up there, I might not go up there for like 3, 4 months, 5 months, but whenever I was up there, she would be there. It was like she was very much active at
that's just amazing.
Ashram in South Fallsburg.
That whole circle, you know, how everything just kind of circled. And that's how it happens. Right. That's how the universe works.
And all of that's led you to share this podcast, share your stories, share some of the qualities that you talk about that are, it's amazing, amazing landscape. Just around what it is, you know, the personal experience that you've had and the desire to share that around, you know, some, I mean, you quote Ram Dass in one podcast, if all we do is get caught in suffering, all we do is dig everyone's hole deeper. Yeah. Yep. But that's a tough statement also. It's a tough statement because today, the level of suffering is so great. It is so powerful. It is so overwhelming. And I know you talked about in one podcast about the difference between well-wishers and allies, you know, related to the anger, the hurt, and the exhaustion, the injustices that everyone with any kind of empathetic heart is feeling. Mm-hmm. So I just love that you're talking about that. And I actually maybe just to mention a little bit here, because to me the most important thing is who we can share whatever with, our pain, mm-hmm. our happiness, our intentions for a better world, all of it, is who mm-hmm. we can share that with. And you have an interesting definition for what you call well-wishers and mm-hmm. allies. So why don't you talk about that for a bit?
So well-wisher versus ally, this also comes from my spiritual teacher, Rudrani, stemming from Guru Muktananda. So an ally is defined as a person, you know, like you may have a girlfriend, right? And you have just gotten fired by your boss or whatever. And so your girlfriend and intended to, you know, have your back and to be on your side. Yeah, well, you know what? I always thought that he was a jerk. You know, he never treated you well anyway, you know? So it's like wanting to be on your side, but not realizing that you're actually just making the situation even more dire, because we are still going down that toboggan slide of woe was me, of he was a jerk to me, of, you know, everything that could go wrong. But an ally is going to ask you questions. But a well-wisher, thank you, babe. But a well-wisher is going to help you come into your greater self. It's going to help you see what we can get out of this. It's going to help you see how we can move forward and hopefully not to have this type of experience again. So it's things like, well, how did you feel, you know, when he let you go or when he said or he or she said whatever to you? It's helping you to do that self-inquiry. Mm-hmm. Right. And then when you do that self-inquiry, you have some sense of freedom. You have, you know, you have a you know, strength, you have power. It's not like, you know, you're just at the behest of whoever wants to do whatever to you. The self-inquiry allows you to kind of go inward. And once you tap into that space, you become transformed into something different for the next moment.
Yeah. It's very interesting that sometimes they don't even seem two different. It's not like one is on your side and one is an enemy. It's like they both can, if you from an outside observer, can look like, you know, they're doing a good thing. But if you look, pay attention to the details of one is really empowering you and one is just, you know, I got your back, bro, man. Well, you know, let's go get a drink. And let's say drinking is the thing that kind of takes you downhill, but it's familiar for you. You know, I'll buy you a drink. I mean, I got the first five rounds, man. Let's go do like, that's not the, you know, it may seem like it's a good thing or it feels good or somebody has your back, but it's not the most empowering path to take with you. You know,
it's digging your hole deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're in that quote for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. All I can say is I'm sure you do, and I'm really happy to have. It's also just using the well-wisher. I might have flipped those. I don't know, well-wisher. I like ally better. That encompasses right. Somebody who's telling you the truth. This,
he said the same thing, but here's the thing about an ally, right? When we have ally countries, like no matter what the country has done, our ally is going to be with us to go to war or whatever. So the ally is not the instigator, but it's just a person who says, you know what, we're just going to, you know, go down this road with you. But the well-wisher may actually try to get you to see it a different way.
Yeah.
And maybe we don't have to go down this road. Maybe we can take a higher road, or maybe there's a different option. So the ally, you know, is more of the person who is the bank robber. Let's do this, man.
It took me a moment. I did the same thing, Raghu, because she shared it with me and I was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, you give me the definitions, I understand it, then we can move forward. But initially I was like, well, it's that word wisher that threw it up. I wish you well, good luck with that. You know, it seemed like that. I was like, okay,
but,
all right.
But the reality is it's the way words are used, right? We could say the ally is Oh God, I just thought of something terrible that I don't really want to, dumb MF. The ally's a dumb MF, right?
Right.
And the well-wisher is, higher mind. And somebody with higher mind is really going to give you the kind of support, the kind of truth, and mm-hmm. help really identify and go inside and do the kind of self-inquiry that will help transform the reactivity.
Yes, exactly. The reactivity. And that's why we did this podcast, Well-Wisher versus Ally, especially in this time, because we do have so many people, right, of especially of the white community who is realizing, you know, the depth of what has been going on. And so they, you know, you really want to be there to help now. But this is a very critical time in our country. So we have to make sure that the help is not digging our hole deeper. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I really want to bring awareness to, and just for people to, you know, have something to think about as they're working to help.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way you had put it before, she didn't want, you know, because it was kind of that was a topic, was many people of the white community, like you said, wanted to get involved and wanted to know, how can I help? How can I be there for you? And she wanted to make it clear, you don't want to come around with the poor you.
The pity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, poor you, these freaking racists. You know what? Oh, my people or something else. I tell you, and mm-hmm. you, and the other person's listening saying, yeah, you know what? That's messed up what they're doing to me. You know, taking on the victim role. We don't want the ally version of help. Actually be there to be empowering.
Yeah, so. I hear you. Listen, you know, here I am. And I'm from Canada originally. So it's a little different for me, just because I grew up in such a monolithic kind of a thing. You know, there wasn't multiracial going on early when I was a kid, till I was about 10 years old. So I am, like all of us, just getting educated. And, you know, part of the foundation is going through trainings and so on and getting educated about the realities of what is going on and what has gone on for hundreds of years in this country that we as white privilege have ignored. And so it's I can see every what you're talking about, how you easily can help dig the hole deeper just by virtue of the most extraordinary stories that you tell yourself about all of this. You know, mm-hmm. And if it isn't that, it's getting, and you talked about it, getting exhausted. I mean, it just happened again yesterday, the day before, a man getting shot. You can't relate with it that way whatsoever. So I love the way that you're speaking of the difference between allies and well-wishers. And this hopefully will be productive for everybody.
Yeah, and that's and thank you so much, first of all, for having us on your podcast. But that's one reason why, you know, we created I Am Not That, because we had to sit with it. I had to sit with it for a couple of years because I knew what a daunting subject that this matter was, but it was so embedded in my spirit. And I believe that this is what has been my purpose of my spiritual path. But we wanted to just to share, you know, with our community and with, you know, our country, period, how not to, you know, to realize who we really are. Because especially in our community, it's not talked upon like at all. You know, we have so much rich spiritual teachings in this country right now, but certain communities still are not exposed to it or is still not being brought to them. And so what I Am Not That podcast wants to do is bring the teachings and bring that awareness, you know, to our community and also to the white community, because a podcast is actually meant for both. It's meant for everyone. But I Am Not That means that I am not that you know, limited person that everyone is trying to tell me or convince me that I am. You know, I am not that victim of my circumstance or wherever I may live or my financial, you know, bracket. I don't have to be those things. So it's like learning how not to identify with what's going on in your life. You're not that, you're so much bigger than that. And when you realize that you're bigger than that, then you could begin to rewrite it, redirect it, transform, you know, to something bigger and better, something that fits your, you know, more of what you desire in your life.
Yeah. And again, I am not that. It caught my eye when you first wrote to me and then introduced what you were doing. Because of, and we started the whole conversation out with Ramana Maharshi, the great saint sage who left in 1950, and is most well known for the beauty of self inquiry. Right? And I'm not sure if you know if you know him, you know the story. At 16 years old, I can't go on one more second without knowing who I am. What is this? And he lay down all night. He said, I'm not moving until I find that out. And he found that out. That happens to one in every 16 quadrillion billion people, probably, you know. Right. And it was just, you know, this was what his destiny. And then he immediately after that, actually, or not immediately, but within some years, moved to stay at Tiruvannamalai, which has that, you know, beautiful mountain right in the center of it. And so something he said, I thought I'd read to you for us, actually. What is the means for constantly holding on to the thought, who am I? When other thoughts arise, one should not pursue them, but should inquire, to whom did they arise? It does not matter how many thoughts arise. As each thought arises, one should inquire with diligence, to whom has this thought arisen? The answer that would emerge would be, quote unquote, to me. Therefore, if one inquires, who am I? The mind will go back to its source, and the thought that arose will become quiescent. Sounds perfectly reasonable and doable.
Right.
That's all.
But, just do that. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I have to say that, you know, I am particularly interested when it comes to using mind and as a practice. And I love the Tibetans, and I love what they represent and their version of reality. Because it combines the heart practice, which is what, you know, which is our legacy. Just one more thing, but do you know, have you heard of Nisargadatta Maharaj, who is in that tradition?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
All right. I'm going to read you one thing from him. He says, I am now 74 years old, and yet I feel that I am an infant. I feel clearly that in spite of all the changes, I am a child. My guru told me that child, which is you, even now, is your real self. Go back to that state of pure being where the I am is still in its purity before it got contaminated with this I am or that I am. Your burden is of false self-identifications. Abandon them all. My guru told me, trust me, I tell you, you are divine. Take it as the absolute truth. Your joy is divine. Your suffering is divine too. All comes from God. Remember it always. You are God. Your will alone is done. I did believe him and soon realized how wonderfully true and accurate were his words. I did not condition my mind by thinking, I am God, I am wonderful, I am beyond. I simply followed his instruction, which was to focus the mind on pure being, I am, and stay in it. I used to sit for hours together with nothing but the I am in my mind, and soon peace and joy and a deep, all-embracing love became my normal state. In it all disappeared myself, my guru, the life lived, the world around me. only peace remained an unfathomable silence. Mm-hmm. How great is that?
That's amazing.
Okay, I had to get my breath back. That just took my breath away.
That was transformative listening.
Oh yeah, goodness. Really, huh?
No, the energy. I was just started to sway as I was listening.
I know.
Yeah, like you want to go into meditation.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I'm going to need that in an email. I need you to email that to me, please.
I will. We're going to put it in the show notes.
Okay.
Along with Conversations with God, along with stuff from Ramana Maharshi. All the guys, they'll listen to this and they'll put that all together. And a link, of course, to I Am Not That podcast, which everything I just referred to is in that pocket, right? Okay. Oh. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to share that if we got an inkling of that, just a taste, just a touch, how much that transforms your life. Because I, being a Black female in this country, I had some instances where I felt that, this was happening to me because of the color of my skin, or I'm being treated this way because of the color of my skin. And then when I started to step into something more inner, when I started to turn inwardly, and then I started to touch that place in me, and I started realizing who I actually was, like he says, that pureness when you were a child. Mm-hmm. And so when I got a taste of it, that transformation took place and I no longer had those experiences that I found myself having because I now identified differently. Mm-hmm. And when I began to identify differently, then I started to have, different life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where my transformation took place.
Well, and that's where the impetus to do the work you're doing now, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing what you attract and repel just by your frequency, the vibration that you are vibrating at really kind of guides the experiences that even come your way. The things I used to run into often, it was like, once again, all of a sudden I never even run into those things. They happen to miss me. It's like, it's almost like that movie, The Matrix, like this, like something so surreal, things just happen to you just miss you. You don't interact with them the same. All the madness is still out here. The things are still happening. All the suffering that gets spoken about, it's still happening, but many things just they don't seem to pull towards you when you change your vibration.
And then I also just want to speak very quickly on the fact that it doesn't mean that you still don't experience, dark moments in your life, or you still don't, go through the bullshit that's out there, or people still don't piss you off. But through that self-inquiry practice, through that, look at me being upset.
Witness, Ram Dass.
With that witness that Ram Dass talks about quite often, where you get to the point where you can't even enjoy a piece of pizza anymore.
Eating pizza.
Yeah. But it's that when you do that, then you start to control the mind, and the mind is not controlling you.
Mm-hmm. Just real quick, I just want to share because of what Tez is saying, that that wasn't even that long ago. A few days ago, I got into this little exchange with someone, and it's not that easy to pull me into the nonsense. I can see it for what it is and just kind of play it at a distance, but here I am getting pulled in little by little, like, ma'am, if you just calm down, like I'm getting into it. And then after the moment was over, I was getting in my car and it was hitting me like the Ram Dass, thank you. Thank you for showing me where I still need to work. And even as I was remembering that, I was still caught in it. So I was saying that Ram Dass part, but with my teeth grit. It's weird. Like you're doing this work, you're putting in this practice, but it's still, you still can get caught up,
For sure. Stuff. We are human. Yes.
Yes.
And I just want to also, just one more thing, Raghu. So something hit my spirit. I call it, well, he actually called it Ancestral Amends Day, because what our country needs is we have never healed. This country has never collectively apologized to the ancestors, to the people that were beaten, enslaved. And so what came to me was to have a day of contrition and forgiveness. Because without the forgiveness, we cannot move forward, no matter how much we pound the pavement, no matter how much we pump our fists in the air. If we don't have forgiveness in our hearts, then all of our efforts are going to be in vain, and we're going to get discouraged, and we're going to just, you know, spin out. So I'm working on something. Well, we're working on something. We haven't started yet, but we're going to start real soon, called Ancestral Amends Day Wednesday. And I want it to happen the day before Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving means something so very different for one demographic than it does for the other. Yeah. So I think that, you know, doing this day of contrition and forgiveness the day before Thanksgiving, on Thanksgiving, we can have true thankfulness.
That's beautiful. And you let us know, of course, all about it, and whatever we can do to support, we will. I mean, it's just really a fantastic idea, you two, really.
Yeah. And because our country needs to heal.
Yeah, we absolutely have to heal. Absolutely. I'm so happy I met you. Thank you for writing.
I'm so delighted that you had us on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this is really amazing.
Yeah.
Listening to you over and over and over again, and then to actually meet you and be a part of this is amazing.
And the podcast is so much a part of our daily lives. And now, including Mind Rolling, I was listening today. So it's like your podcasts are very much a part of our day-to-day lives.
Really,
so thank you.
Appreciate it. So everybody, as I said before, we will have all of the different books we've been talking about, gurus, saints, podcasts, all of it will be available in the show notes for the show when it goes up. And you guys will do this again and stay in close touch, of course. So thank you so much, Tez and Koa, and this is Mind Rolling on the Be Here Now Network, and we will check out all the other stuff going on Be Here Now, BeHereNowNetwork.com, and we will see you next week.